Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. And I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economic. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control buildings and industry, and put that pools in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lease. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folks got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. Even though you only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March for what? Who cares? Marching has never changed anything.
see income. One woman and a sewing machine.
No.
Okay, take a guess. I've been doing it since 2008. So just a random guess. How much? How much? 90,000?
No, more than that.
It is a little higher. It's less than 300, a quarter million dollars.
Right.
One woman and a sewing machine. Started in 2006. I was a stay-at-home mom. We had three children at the time. And it was like president of PTA. My husband was a captain of an Airbus. It was a good life. Until a letter came in the mail to let me know that my husband knows that the airline that he had worked for 20 years was filing bankruptcy and he would be unemployed. So, this is my husband on the couch. I don't know if you've ever lost your identity, but it's no fun. And I think women do better with that than men. It's especially no fun for men. Here's my husband Dylan on the couch, and he stayed there for quite some time. And both of our dreams, in a sense, were flushed down the toilet because all I ever wanted to be was a mom. So I didn't want to have to leave these kids and put them in daycare. And I also was holding out a little bit of hope that he would fly again. And that would mean traveling. And so it was kind of pointless for me to go and get a full-time job. And then what do I do with these children, right? Mm-hmm. So I sat and spent 3 days about, because it's pure panic. You go from a nice income to no income. You've got to do something. What can I do? What can I do? And I went to that life is good mentality. And I thought, if we have to redesign our whole life, we're going to do something that we love. So Darian couldn't even talk about love. He's still on the couch. So I said, what do I love? I know I love babies. And I know I love bags. I still really love bags. And I am kind of looking forward to grandbabies. So I thought initially, this is before the big handmade craze. Etsy, I think they just celebrated their 13th birthday. So this was in 2006. So the wave hadn't hit yet with handmade goods. So I thought, I'll buy other people's goods and resell them on my .com. And I thought, that's a good idea. I can do that and stay at home with the kids. And so the product started arriving. Most of it I was getting off eBay. And I could see like little tiny flaws and imperfections. I had ideas. Oh, if they would have just done this, it'd be so much better. That probably happens to y'all when you're working. And so I just couldn't help myself. And I went and bought a sewing machine, which puts me down here at the novice level. This is the person who borrows the machine and then asks you to thread it for them. They're gonna get real far since the ball runs out, right? It's like, what do I do with it now? And they're knocking at your door. Can you find this bobbin for me? Yeah. So I got a sewing machine. I'm sitting at our dining room table, which is right inside of our front door. And it wasn't very long. You know how the fabric addiction works. Pretty bad. And there's no stopping it. Have any of you recovered?
No.
Yeah. So I have pictures of our youngest daughter, Isabel, who's now 9, as an infant, in a pile of remnants this high. I have a problem. So I fill our dining room with fabric, and I have a sewing machine, and I'm learning slowly how to sew and not scream at people when they interrupt me. I make it through that phase of the business, and I have a product that's very basic, but my friends and neighbors will buy it probably because they feel really bad on me. staring still on the couch. So I take these bags to the high school and have a craft fair, and I sell $500, which I was like, wow, this is fun. I like having my own money. And we can eat this week, honey. I then had a little better product and I took that to eBay, because there actually was a really nice handmade division of eBay back in 2006. And I did very well on eBay. I made power seller status and was consistently earning at least $500 a month, which is buying enough groceries, and some food is better than no food. So then in 2008, one of my eBay customers told me about Etsy. And for me, Etsy really was an overnight success. I had a sale in just a few hours, and sales were consistent. They were way better than eBay because they have this very targeted customer base. When you go to Etsy, you're looking for handmade. When you go to eBay, you could be looking for anything, right? So I was had that instant success. So Darren had a job again, another airline. We decided we should have a fourth kid. I was having a great time running my little business. We had some extra money. Guess what happened? He lost his second airline job. And I'm super pregnant. And that was before we had any health care laws to protect us. So now we don't have a job. We have a baby on the way, and we have no health insurance. That was terrifying. Middleburg in the winter. So I had this lease, and I had to now sew as hard as I was sewing before, fill all my Etsy orders and pay this rent and fill the store. That's the part I underestimated. How am I going to fill this store up? I don't have time to make all this product. And what happens if you go in a store and there's not much to look at, right? I'm not taking it serious. So I had to get other people to make things and bring them into my store. And luckily, people were excited to do that because they too loved Middleburg. And a lot of people would come into the shop and ask me, oh, I want to do what you do. How can I do it? And I said, you can sell your stuff right here. I don't have time to fill the store. So I gave them a really good deal. It was like a 60-40 split in their favor. But what I didn't realize was when they would come, we would start collaborating, there was like this energy, this amazing, I call it like a high, or they might say in the zone, and time would cease for me, and I was so happy to just be networking with them. And I knew then that's the good stuff. How do I get more of that? But I never could figure out how to balance those winter months and the high rent and all of that so it would make financial sense to keep that boutique open. But I wanted to find a way to keep those beautiful people in my life. So I made the hard decision. I closed that store. And it was a hard goodbye, but I said goodbye to everybody. A lot of people were sad, but it just wasn't going to make financial sense to do that. So I don't look at that as a failure. I say I earned my MBA. I spent that much money. And I probably learned more than I would teach you if I had gone to school. So right before I closed that shop, I founded SewSpire.com, which is the YouTube channel. And initially I thought, I want to reach 10,000 people. And that was just an outrageous number that I just picked to throw out there. I have one subscriber. Guess who it was?
No.
My husband. I told the kids, I'm going to be a YouTuber. They're teenagers. They're like, okay, Mom. So I bought a GoPro. I didn't know what I was doing. I really didn't. My first videos, I don't have the heart to delete them because they're proof of what a dork I was. So I keep them up there anyway. And sometimes people will watch them and they have their nerve to go, oh, you ought to do this. I'm like, there's 100 more videos after that. Fast forward. So I did that, and I started with that one loyal fan that I have, and closed the shop, and then I moved into a little tiny, probably, what do you think that space was like, less than 200 square feet, tiny one room commercial space in the Plains, Virginia, which is just a little bit up the road from Middleburg, and I really, at that point, was still kind of licking my wounds from the shop and just wanted to figure out who I was going to be and how I was getting there. So there was one window in the place and it faced another building and there was a vine at the side of the building. So by summertime, I had no light. One rinky dink light at the top. And so I stayed there and my focus was growing that YouTube channel. I would consistently produce free tutorials for them once a week and then growing my Etsy business. Now at this time I didn't have any more babies and diapers, so I didn't really carry a diaper bag anymore, so I was finding it harder to communicate with new moms. I did have was a camera and four beautiful children, so I had grown very fond of photography. And so I adapted that product line to be camera bags, which I brought some samples to show my scrappy patchwork camera bag. And this, the padding on this, believe it or not, baby crib, that new foam for baby crib bags. So my mom hat was still thinking for my camera. We're going to keep that good shape. So I started making camera bags and then camera strap covers, because you know how the camera strap is so irritating on the neck, and then there's a little pocket there for your lens cap. I invested in an embroidery machine. Does anybody have an embroidery machine? thread addiction, right after fabric addiction.
Right.
Yeah, so that's what I do now in my Etsy shop is make custom camera bags and camera strap covers. And then the Etsy shop's always been great, so I had no problem building up that. And I'm slowly growing this YouTube channel. And now we're up to almost 25,000 subscribers when I turn that focus onto that. So because I have so much extra time running these two businesses, just kidding, I launched another business called theforcing.com because I was still not getting my fix with these women that I miss so much. So the Forcing I just launched last October, and it's a platform to mentor and coach other women who think they're just moms or just sewers, and they want to break into the Etsy world or any form or fashion of selling your product. So I launched that, and that's the facet of my business that I'm most excited about because I want to get back there working with those women and those makers again, because it's exactly the feeling I had here when I saw what you all are doing. This stuff does change the world. It's not just sewing or just quilting. And you all know that, so I'm preaching to the choir. But when you're passionate about something like that, you'll do anything to get back there and have more of that. So what I did in May, because now this little studio is closing in on me, and that vine's growing like crazy, and I have no light, and I want to do all these things. I moved into my dream studio. It's on the third floor of the same building, 500 square feet. I have a back office. I have so much sunlight. It's unbelievable. And if you go to the YouTube channel, there's a tour of it, so you can see it. All my fabric bibs. 20 sewing machines fixed. I need that many, right? My husband, God bless him, he never asked any questions. Okay, honey. And I just keep loading it in. So that's what I'm doing now, and we've set some big goals for the YouTube channel. Actually, my 9-year-old set this goal. I woke up one Saturday morning to her going, Mom, do you realize you can get this plaque from YouTube when you reach 100,000 subscribers? I'm like, oh, really? It's about that size. She keeps talking about. So I looked it up. It's a legit thing. They'll send you this plaque. And she was so excited about it. And I said, okay, so we probably can't get to 100,000 subscribers because I made it this far. I'm like, what, 25% of the way there? I said, all right, what do you want to do when we get 100,000 subscribers? And we decided we're going to go in a hot air balloon.
Yeah.
So then, because my children are overachievers, I don't know how that happened. I can't imagine where we went wrong. Your dad was on the couch. They look at me and they go, Mom, what are you going to do when you get to 1 million subscribers? Okay, we're going to ride elephants in India. Is that good enough? So that's my story, but I want to leave you with a quote, my favorite quote, and a thought, so in case you don't get everything else I said tonight. So the quote, forever, I thought, was by someone named George Eliot, and I have a silver bookmark there. My husband found it on an airplane more than a decade ago, because you know when they clean the airplanes, people leave stuff behind. And he found that, and he thought it reminded him of me, and he brought it home to me. He had no idea. I asked him about it the other day. He had no idea I still have it. And I read it every day when I go to work. And it says, it is never too late to be what you might have been. George Eliot. I'm assuming George is a man. All these years. But I knew I was coming here and I was using this quote, so I said, I better Google George and make sure he's not a freak. And I'm going to quote him. George is a woman. That was her pen name. And she was a very famous Victorian age author who wanted her work to be respected. And she used a man's name. That was in the 1800s. So, and her real name is Marianne Evans. So if Marianne knew that to be the truth in the 1800s, we can believe it today in 2018. So it's never too late. That's the first thought. And then the second thought slash lesson is, you must have more than one dream in this lifetime, okay? It's all right to have more than one dream and chase it. And you are the only person that has to believe in your dream, okay?
Welcome.
Producing uniforms for our nation's more than 1 million member military is a big job. In Cleveland, Ohio, one company hires people who might otherwise have difficulty finding work. From IdeaStream, the PBS station in Cleveland, Dariel Snipes has the story.
Like the women who vow to fight for our freedom, the employees at Vocational Guidance Services, or VGS, fight their own personal battle each day that comes in the form of a physical or cognitive disability.
I'm visually impaired. I was born legally blind with sight.
I have mild autism, and I've been having it, the struggles with it growing up.
Barbara Moore and David Ogletree both work at VGS, a nonprofit that trains those living with disabilities by giving them hands-on experience. VGS is currently producing 3,000 pairs of trousers a month. And these just aren't any pair of pants. They are made for the women who serve in the Army and Marines. In the basement of VGS, the fabric is first cut into panels to make pants. Next, on the second floor, it takes only 40 minutes for employees to transform the panels into trousers. Barbara sews the buttons, but she also folds and presses the pants. She's worked at VGS for 16 years, and she doesn't let her disability stop her.
Me personally, I don't have a disability. I have a different way of life. When I first started, of course, you know, I had to have brighter lights. They had to raise the machine or lower the machine, you know. But when you're comfortable with doing it after so long, you can do it in your sleep.
David inspects the pants and is as meticulous as if he were in the military.
I always believe that it's good to help those who serve the country.
Sabrina Salinka, general manager of sewing, says they are able to produce high-quality garments by a group some may underestimate, with a lot of time and training.
It's definitely something that makes all of us proud. Some of them had dreams of wanting to join the military, but they couldn't. So being here gives them that sense of pride of being able to have a contribution to the military.
Barbara says she loves giving back to the women in the military.
First of all, I love parades. And my favorite part of the parade is the military. And it's like, for some reason, I just get so excited when the military comes on. And I tell whoever's standing next to me, I say, hey, I help make their uniforms. They'd be like, wow.
VGS is working on expanding its government contract to possibly make other garments for the military. That way, it will keep these workers producing quality clothing as well as potentially hiring more people with disabilities. For PBS NewsHour, I'm Darielle Snipes in Cleveland.
And three cheers for... Producing uniforms for our nation's more than 1 million members.
Hello and welcome to My Easy Life. This is Sharon. If you're here, then I know you're one of those women who...
Annette. Hello. Okay. All right. It's just me and you for this very first one for the Sewing Club podcast. The first audio I played, and this is being recorded, so you can play this over and over again. But this is the first one we're doing for just on sewing. So the first audio I played, I don't think you heard the beginning of it. This lady, but you can play it over again. I sent you the link.
Okay.
So about 30 minutes after we finish talking, just go to that link, click on it, and then you can hear it from the beginning. But the lady, you came on part of it, but she basically took She had a sewing machine, and she earned $250,000 a year from one sewing machine.
Okay, but okay.
Sewing knick-knack. Well, you'll hear. It wasn't nothing. It wasn't rocket science. I mean, I couldn't do it because I don't know how to sew yet. But
okay.
I'm sure you'll pick up some ideas on that. And then I was looking for. I got it somewhere here. I'm not going to skip around to try to find it. Steve Harvey had a lady on his show. She did like $2 million a year. But she was collaborating with other people.
Okay, what did she do? Because I heard about the uniforms that they was making for the Army, okay? I heard that.
All right, now that wasn't Steve Harvey. That was another lady.
Oh, okay, yeah.
All right, no, that was a different lady. But you already know how to do alterations. All right, well, the first step is I need to get you a sewing machine equivalent to, you know, what you helped me with last week. So, but I don't want it to come to me. I'll pay for it here, but it's got to be shipped to you. So,
hey, but you know the home address. You know the address. You know where I am. Yes, okay.
So, let me see. What I'll do is, wait a minute. Let's say midday tomorrow, 12, 1 o'clock your time. Give me a call, and then we can pick one out, and then it'll be shipped directly to you.
Okay. That's a regular sewing machine. You know what I'm saying. Hey, so, yeah.
Well, it's not going to be one of these out-of-the-world sewing machines to start, so.
Oh, no, that's a regular thing. I don't need nothing. You know, that's a regular sewing machine that you do alteration, or you can sew. You know what it has. You know what I'm saying. Yes, a regular sewing machine,
right.
Yes.
Now, on future shows, because we can add a video portion of this, because this is just audio, where teach, cause like for me, I'm a rank beginner. So, I mean, how to thread a machine, but first thing, what are the parts? Yeah, the basics. And then some people, we can put out information, some people, they do alterations. That's what they make a career out of alterations.
Oh, but alterations, so, you get a whole lot of money. You get alterations, man, you make a lot of money in alterations.
Right, right. So that information we want out there. And then for us, basically, if you can teach me how to get my skill level out, then we can basically, for people listening, okay, if they're looking for money or they got a problem to solve, if they learn how to sew, which I think is basic, I wouldn't have been talking like this 5, 10, 20, 30 years ago. But from my mother, well, our aunts, they learned how to sew before they left the house. Today they don't do
that. That was more or less passed down, you know, from their mom, you know, being taught something, you know, that you can use, you know.
Yeah, but that's a useful, that's a very useful skill set.
Skill, yes, it is. Yes, it is.
Yeah, I mean, because you got to wear clothes.
And that's something you don't have to go to school for, you know, basically, you know what's the name, because it's just sitting down, you know, looking at what needs to be done.
Well, I call that homeschooling.
Yes, okay. Okay.
Yeah, so I think,
and just like, you know,
I went to college and all that. I wish I would have learned this before I got out of high school.
But I did have a class that home economics, you know, in high school, you know, where they taught you the basic things, you know, about sewing, you know, what's the name. And just
but your
like,
mother,
you know,
knew how to sew before she left home, didn't she?
My mama didn't sew. My mom
she did?
Was the only one who did know. No.
Oh, that's okay.
I know your mom and I know Aunt Eunice and Marie. I know that they were sold. Okay. I don't know if the, I don't know if California or the other one. You know really? How to sew. Yeah, I don't know about any Vivian. No, I've never known.
Okay, well, my mother was that. That was like, her passion.
Oh yes, and it's a good hobby. Yeah. It is a good hobby, you know. Just like you know when you're never lonely. You know, that you're looking for something. You know, it wasn't after you had finished doing that. You know, but and it's something that you don't have to finish all at one time. You know what's the name? It's something that you can go back to, you know, and finish. You know. And a good thing is just like before you even talk about it, it's only just like a lot of people do that basting. And basting is doing some stitch with a regular needle, you know, going across, you know, what you want to sew, more or less have like a guide where this is what you're going to do. You just don't take and put the thing, you know, on the sewing machine and bust, and you have, you baste with a hand needle first, and then you get that sewing machine, yes. And that's what you do, you know, with the sewing machine.
Now, when you do alterations, are you doing by hand or do you do a machine or, you know, either way?
Oh, either way, but the best way is to do it on hand and then reinforce it with, you know, the sewing machine to make sure, you know, that you got it right. You do it by hand first, in order, you know, before you get and sew it. So to see, you know, have that person ready to more or less try to see if this is going to work, because you don't want to sew it. And then you've got to take it all loose, because that takes time, you know. It's ripping things apart.
All right. All right, yes. Well, when you call me tomorrow from midday on, be in front of your computer, and that way we can take a look at Amazon and Walmart and order that machine. So, like I said, I'll pay for it here, then, but it'll be shipped to you.
Oh,
I like Amazon the best, but Walmart might have a better deal.
Amazon, you know, what I'm trying to do, I'm trying to have everybody to have a job. You know, I just want to put it in one place where, as you know, what's the name, want everybody. Mm-hmm. That way it keeps everybody, because just like they talked about with the post office, we need the post office. You can't get rid of the post office, you know. If you're talking about getting rid of the post office, you're looking at getting rid of a whole lot of people, you know, for jobs. And if you're trying to get people to keep jobs, and just like, you know, with Amazon, you know, Amazon is good.
Well, it is.
You know,
look, Amazon comes through this neighborhood every day.
But just like, but Amazon is good, but you want to keep the department stores so other people can have jobs, you know, everything. You don't want everything going to because you're not keeping
people
well,
what's happening is, what's happening is not all of the brick-and-mortar stores are going to close down, but it's just like new jobs, old jobs straight out, new jobs pop up. So it's like Sears looks like it's on its last legs, but I mean, I love Amazon because I can get, or even Walmart now, because I can get on a computer, order something, and they bring it right to my front door.
Yeah, I know. That's good now, and just like it's, and it's actually ordinary good now because of the things that we are going through. But just like I said, we don't want to close down those stores because look how many people are knocking out jobs.
Yeah, that's true. Well, a lot of people are working from home now.
Huh?
Yeah, because a lot of people are working from home, just like this lady, the audio that I played.
Yes, but,
you know,
but
she made $250,000.
Everybody cannot work from home. You got to look at
that's true. Not
all
everybody
the whole,
can.
The entire area. You got to look at it all. You don't want to, you know, just get a few people more work to do. And look how many you're knocking out of a job. You got to look at the job market. That's what I'm looking at. I'm looking at the full circle. I'm looking at the full circle. Yeah, and not just like I said, and close down buildings and how your neighborhood is going to look. Okay?
That's true.
And this is what, I got to think about, you know, I got to broaden my horizon, you know. I just don't want to put it to a certain, you know, what's the name.
Right.
I don't.
All right,
yeah,
well, hold it. I got outro music here. Wait a minute. For next Sunday, I'll find that one on Steve Harvey because he had one of them. But she did it with some other people, $2 million off
of
song.
But sewing is it's a good hobby, just like, and it's all different kind because in that you've got your knit and all different kind of things where you make things, you know what I'm saying? You're using your hands And it's activating your mind, and it's good for people who are, oh, you'd be surprised, the handicapped people, you know, who can do it.
Well, yeah, well, yeah. Now, one of the audios I played, I think what they were making pants for the military.
Yes.
Those were handicapped people.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. You know,
We want to be inclusive.
We don't want to be exclusive, okay?
Well, sewing gets it all in.
Oh, yes, it includes everybody.
It gets it all in. All right, then. Well, give me a call midday tomorrow, and we'll get that sewing machine ordered.
Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Thanks a lot.
Okay.
Talk to you. Bye.
Okay.